For the win! Yes! Yes!
At the buzzer, McCord on its way!
Oh, oh my goodness! Oh!
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do.
For the win!
Courtside with Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Coach G, and my new sidekick, D Squared, Dan Dockich, will be joining us shortly. We'll also have Chris Holtman, the new head basketball coach at Ohio State University, the Ohio State University. But before we get to that, we've got some NCAA news. No, North Carolina has still not resolved their issue with the NCAA, but Louisville has. Louisville, they've been handed a four-year probation, but they are eligible for the NCAA tournament. So basically, nothing's taken away from them moving forward. They've got their self-imposed postseason ban has been taken care of, so they can play in the NCAA tournament this year. Rick Pitino will have a five-game suspension, a five-game ACC game suspension. Now, it's interesting because Jim Boeheim got eight games. Rick Pitino only with five. And I'm saying this right now. With Rick Pitino having a five-game suspension, do not be shocked to see Ralph Willard, his longtime assistant, who has been retired, to come out of retirement for the year to help prepare this team, those five games, that Coach Pitino is not going to be with the basketball team. Andre McGee gets a 10-year show cause. Really? Okay, like that was a shock. We knew that Andre McGee was no longer going to be an opportunity to coach. He gets a 10-year show cause. Not very surprising. They've got to have a scholarship reduction, a reduction of four scholarships over the next 4 years. That is absolutely nothing. Nada. Forget it. It means nothing. No one uses all 13 scholarships. You might have an opportunity to redshirt guys, but to lose one scholarship a year over the next 4 years, that has no impact on Rick Pitino's ability to maintain this Louisville program at a high level. So as I look at these sanctions, and finally, Rick Pitino, he got charged with a failure to monitor. And, you know, you can fight that all you want. Josh, Dan, you can fight it all you want. It's in the rule book. It's the way it's written. Whether you want to admit it or not, whether you say you should or shouldn't be, all right, you are responsible as the head basketball coach for everything that happens in your program. Whether you realize it or not, whether you want to admit it or not, whether you knew it or not, you are responsible for the people you hire. So I look for Rick Pitino maybe to challenge that. But the rule is the rule. And because things happened, all right, he's got to be held accountable just like any other coach because of the way this rule is written. In a big picture, Louisville got off easy. Because in the end, they're back in the NCAA tournament. It's not going to impact recruiting. The five games Coach Pitino will miss in the ACC, it'll be interesting to see where those games fall. Most schedules are backloaded, so I'd be interested to see the five games they start the season with. He's going to have his whole preseason with his basketball team to prepare them for those five games. The one negative is during the course of that time period, which will be about 2.5 weeks, he will not be able to have any interaction with his staff or the players in his program, which I think is an absolutely awful rule to take your head coach away from your players, right? Whether it's mentoring, whether it's making sure they're held accountable academically, socially, in any other way, to eliminate that person from those players' lives, to me, is wrong. I can understand, look, if you're going to suspend them for games, all right, that's the decision of the committee. But you should not pull that coach away from his responsibility to help those young players deal with everything but basketball. I think Louisville's in pretty good shape, and I think they got off and Louisville basketball will not be impacted whatsoever. Obviously, a lot's going to be going on in this Louisville situation over the next weeks and months and at the start of the season. And, you know, we're going to hear a response from Louisville and Rick Pitino. But before that happens, I'd like to welcome in my new co-host, a man with many opinions. Whether you agree, disagree, he will tell you that there's only one opinion, his opinion, the right opinion. We will agree. We will agree to disagree, but we will always have a take. I'd like to welcome in my guy, Dan Dockich. And our first guest is the new head basketball coach at Ohio State University, Chris Holtman. We'd like to welcome in new Ohio State head basketball coach, Chris Holtman. Chris, how does that sound to you?
Different. Yeah, different. It sounds great, but it does sound different. And, you know, as you guys both have done, when you take a new job, you know, I've picked up the phone and called recruits. And, you know, after you say your name, hey, this is such and such from, I've nearly got it wrong, I'll tell you that. So I'm still getting used to it and still getting familiar with it. It'll take a little bit of time.
How did the process go down? I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you're doing a terrific job at Butler. You've got a terrific program. You had a great season. You got a good group of returning players. All of a sudden, you see a press conference, Thad Matta is no longer going to be the head coach at Ohio State. What was going through your mind, and what was that next week like for you?
It was, you know, there was a lot. It was, you know, on Monday I was in Michigan at Greg Campy's fundraiser. He has a cancer fundraiser, so I was in his golf outing, and I had gotten a couple texts about Thad's situation here. So, you know, I just kind of ignored it, and as I was driving back that night. He just was kind of thinking through. I was shocked, like everybody in college basketball, to be honest with you. And then Tuesday morning, I got a call early in the morning. I was actually getting having a medical procedure done, and I was got a call early in the morning right before I kind of went into this minor deal and asked if I had interest. And you know, my wife was with me, and I just said, you know, I'd be willing to listen. And and then on Tuesday evening is when they called back and said, hey, the job's yours if you want it. So it happened pretty quick, and I just wasn't ready at that point, Seth and Dan, just, you know, to move forward. I just I had a great situation at Butler, and felt like we had a chance to have a pretty good team for the next few years. So I waited, and I told him I couldn't make, you know, I didn't want to talk anymore on Tuesday night. And I felt like on Wednesday, I just wasn't ready. They wanted to come and meet with me on Wednesday. And I just said, I'm just not ready. So if that means that you got to move in a different direction, you got to move in a different direction. I think they took that as me turning it down. And then Wednesday night is when I started to reevaluate things, really.
So when you reevaluate, Chris, are you thinking, oh man, I screwed this up. Did you call him back?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you as many specifics as you want. I don't mind. So when they were pushing to meet with me on Wednesday, and you know, the moment like I'm sure you guys have done, you know, the moment I received the call from Gene, Gene actually called on Wednesday morning. It was the first time I had talked to him, and I called Barry right after, and Gene changed the years from 7 to 8, and you know, which is what the contract I had at Butler. And I, you know, he told me, he said, hey, this is going to, you got some work ahead of you in the short term. So this is the investment we're making, because I understand, you know, we've got some work with our roster. And I said, you know, that is a little bit different. Let me think through things. I called Barry. We had a great conversation, but at that point I was still really committed to staying. And then I called my representative, who called them, and I said, hey, listen, please just tell them I can't meet. Gene wanted to come Wednesday morning. He said, I got a plane ready. I'm going to come over and meet with you. And I just said, I can't do it. And then he wanted to come that night. And I said, hey, listen, if you're coming expecting me to have a decision in hand, then please, you know, don't come. And then that night right then is when I talked to a few more people, and I began to kind of question, hey, you know, was it right? You know, is this an opportunity that I need to take a serious look at? And then on Thursday morning, I got a call at 6 in the morning saying, would you be willing to meet with Gene? And I said, yeah, I would. I don't want him to, you know, I don't want him to fly over here. It would have to be somewhere we drove. And then I called Barry and said, hey, I'm going to have a second, more in-depth conversation. And then things moved pretty quickly after that.
Things move quickly, and you meet with Gene. What was the thing? Because you know you have a great situation. Obviously, money is an issue. Years, league, everything else. What was the one thing that after you had that meeting, you said, you know what, I've got to do this.
Well, I think if you said what was the most overriding thing, it was the fact that I felt like I could continue to recruit the kind of guys that I like to coach in these areas, in the Midwest, in particular in Ohio, in this area, in this breadbasket. I felt like I could, you know, we as a staff could continue to recruit the kind of guys we wanted to recruit and do it the right way. And I saw Fad do it at an extremely high level. Extremely, I mean, he set the bar really high. And I've always kind of looked at this place at Ohio State and said, I think it can be that. I think there's depth in terms of the Ohio and the states around it where you can recruit to, and I think it has the potential to be built to win consistently. And you know, honestly, the Big Ten was attractive to me. You know, to be real honest with you, it was. So I think it's an outstanding coach or outstanding league with great coaches. But so those were kind of the factors. I've tried to limit it. You know, people have talked about the money situation. Obviously, it's beyond what any of us ever thought. But that was the case at Butler too. I mean, I was an interim, and that was an odd deal during my interim situation. But I always said that Barry, you know, that they took care of me there. So I didn't have, that was not at all. I mean, let me just say this. I was offered more money at other places and turned it down. So it was about stuff other than what people may think.
You know, I don't think you ever have to apologize for tripling your salary. You know, I mean, I just don't. I just, you know, people, I obviously I'm here in Indy, and you know, anybody that's a detractor says, oh, it's a money deal. Well, my thing is good. Good for you and good for your family. You mentioned roster. What do you have to do? What do you have to get done before the start of the season with your roster?
Well, we're thin right now. We're just thin in numbers. I think I've spent some time here, we have some terrific kids. And Tata Bates-Diop obviously is coming back from injury, which will help. But we have 9 recruited scholarship players. And then we have, you know, an issue with 1 or 2. So that really impacts our depth. So, you know, I think we've got to decide at this point, Dan, you know, what direction we want to go. It's June. And, do you want to add too much to your roster, even though numbers-wise it's certainly a concern? So I think that's what we're trying to evaluate, given the long-term approach we're trying to take. The classes of 2018 and 19 are going to be really critical for how we move forward. So that's what we're evaluating right now, but potentially we could add to this roster.
So going with a fifth-year, one-year player so that you can really focus on the future is obviously something that's going to be really important. But speaking of players, you take the job, and this is a little backtracking, but you take the job. How did you handle it? I mean, thinking about the timing in June and summer school starting, how difficult was that to deal with your current team and your incoming freshmen?
Well, it's part of the reason I was leaning towards not taking it was the timing. I kept asking. I called a couple coaching friends, and it's interesting. I called guys that had both, you know, stayed at their place for a really long time, and then other guys who had moved. just to kind of get their perspective on, you know, would they do something differently. But I also ask them, hey, tell me about the timing. And, you know, I just said, hey, quite honestly, I do feel like a sense of loyalty to stay with these guys right now. I'm trying to balance that with having real interest in this position. You know, what are your thoughts? You know, I would ask guys. I did that primarily on, I think that was Thursday, when I was really trying to vet the whole situation. It was interesting. I got, varying opinions on that. Most guys said, hey, if you leave, you have positioned the program for continued success. That's really your responsibility. But it was hard. You know, I haven't shared this with too many people, but so, you know, one of the kids, I got close with all the guys, and I started calling them about 8 a.m. on Thursday. And you guys have both coached. You totally get it. You get the connection with players. But, you know, one of the big kids, one of our kids' dad passed away this year. And when I was recruiting him, you know, we talked about, he said, I know you know, other schools have approached you. And I said, well, I'm really hopeful I'm going to be here for 4 years to coach your son. So I called him. I was driving and I said, hey, I don't want you to be upset with me. And he started crying. And then when, you know, he was crying, he said, coach, I don't want you to be mad. He goes, I don't want you to think I'm mad at you. I'm not mad at you. You know, so I was crying too. And it was like two bumbling, guys, talking through a car speaker phone. So those were hard conversations for sure on Friday, and it's part of the reason I wasn't necessarily ready for a press conference on Friday.
When you met with the, you mentioned pretty good kids, so I'm assuming you've met the guys there. What's been the reaction from the kids at Ohio State?
Good. Good. I think they've been really open They've been good. I think we've got a really good group of guys. I think they're excited. They love Thad. Who doesn't? And how could you not love Thad? So I think that was emotional for them last week. They went through some stuff too. But they've been really good, Dan.
Now as you move forward, you've been on the job about a week. You got three or four things. And what are the three most important things for you to do as you move into this July period?
First thing was, and I flew over here quickly just for about 2 hours on Friday just to spend time with the players. I kind of snuck in here and snuck out. So that was the most important thing. I've had meetings with almost, I think, everybody but one or two players right now in individual meetings. This has been really important. So that's first and foremost. I think for me, obviously getting our staff put together was critical, and we're still working on some of the finishing touches of that. And then the next thing has been trying to organize the direction we're going in recruiting, both for in the immediate and in the future. And you know how it is when you take over a new job. You know, people want to hear from you, and they want to know how quickly they're going to hear from you, whether it's coaches or kids or whatever the case may be. So we've tried to really make a point to, as much as possible, to touch the people we've needed to. And then over the weekend, what I did when I just had some time was I tried to connect with a bunch of former players and text them and call them and tell them how excited I am to be here. So those were kind of the main things. There's obviously a ton of other stuff, but those have been most important.
You had a chance to sit down and talk to Thad?
No, I talked to him. I talked to him quite a bit during last week, and it was good. I probably talked to him four times, but I'm going to try to grab him and maybe go to lunch or something here at some point. But he was insightful, and it speaks to who he is. I just kind of said to him, hey, it's important for me that I have your blessing on this, and if not, then that's fine. I'll stay. And he was like, no, hey, I want you to be here. I want what's best. So he was great. He was great.
What's the one thing you're going to carry over from, like, quote-unquote, Butler and your experience there? I mean, think about where you were. I mean, you were very rare because you were one of the brightest young coaches in America because you turned down a job opportunity to work with Dan Dockich, which obviously was a tremendous career move, which enabled you to reach much greater heights. So, I mean, so besides that great decision, what other things are you going to try to take with you from Butler and from your past experiences to Ohio State?
That's right, like crazy.
Hey, I did him a favor. I knew we were being fired, so I'm like, hey, look, you don't want to come here and get fired in a year.
Oh, that was great. That was one of my all-time favorite interviews, by the way. Sometimes we get time off. That was one of my all-time favorite interviews was sitting down with him at a restaurant. He probably doesn't remember it. Sitting down at a restaurant and then going to his house. I think his son, we went to his house and his son was there. It was, that was a fun time. I think there's so much to take from what I learned both, in my really 4 years, 3 years as a head coach, but you know, I think obviously talent wins. I think if there's anything that, you know, that I knew before that I believe is that culture wins. And I think that this program here at Ohio State has had a great culture for a long time with that. And, I'm hoping to that's part of the reason I was attracted to the job. So I think if more than anything, I think we're going to try to do it the way I believe in. I said I always want to take a job where I can coach to my convictions. I don't want to go to a place where I can't coach to my convictions. And, you know, whether it's right or wrong, that's what I'm committed to. Find a place that I can coach my convictions and do it the way I believe in it. And I think I definitely had that at Butler. No question about it. And I certainly believe I have that here.
Greatest thing that I've seen, or the thing I've learned the most being, you know, with ESPN and doing Big Ten games is the importance of staff. You did this really quick. You got your guys basically from Butler to Ohio State and working and going. How important was that to you to keep those guys going with you?
It was important. And you know how this thing works. Sometimes guys get invited to stay, and sometimes guys don't. And guys have different reasons for that. For me, you know, I'm indebted to these guys. They helped us be successful for the last 3 years. And I believe in who they are. They've added a tremendous amount to me as a coach. So to have, you know, to have Ryan, Terry, and Mike come and join it. And it was not one of these things where, I didn't have to twist their arm. I said, hey, listen, this is an opportunity. If you would like it, you're going to have an opportunity here. I also know that I think there's going to be some carryover with LaValle Jordan from my staff there, which I think that'll help in the transition. So, you know, it's important to have those guys. They just got here 2 days ago, and, you know, we've been hard at work, and it certainly makes a difference when you have more manpower than, you know, kind of flying solo.
How about Urban Meyer? Obviously, he's figured out a formula not just at Ohio State, but in college athletics in his football programs. How much are you going to try to rely on him to give you a blueprint of another blueprint on how you can build this elite program back at Ohio State?
As much as he'll let me. As much as he'll let me. I'd be an idiot not to. As much as he's going to let me kind of listen and learn and be around and steal ideas, I'm going to take full advantage of that, full advantage of it. I've heard too many things. You know, 2 weeks ago, I texted a guy who's kind of a football, he's a guy in the national media, and he really knows college football at a really high level. And I said to him, can you give me maybe 3 to 5 football coaches that you think that would be good for me to go and meet with and spend a day or two with? You know, we've heard of coaches doing this in the past. I was going to do it this summer. I was going to take some time to just go do that, maybe pick 2 or 3. And the first person he put was Urban Meyer. So I think I can make that happen this summer. So I'm looking forward to it.
If not, Dan's got you all hooked up because that's his right-hand man right there.
He is hooked up. Yeah. He's hooked up already with that. It's just a matter of Urban being in town. In fact, Urban may be playing golf in Indy with us this weekend. We're not sure. Hey, look, he has a system that is incredible, and I would encourage you to spend as much time because it's not – and I know the Butler way involves a lot of off-the-court stuff, but, man, his off-the-field stuff is unbelievable. It really is.
I've heard that, Dan. I've heard that, and I've heard that. And that's the kind of stuff that, right, you're kind of looking for and you're saying, hey, where are the weak spots? Where can we improve and what can we – and I've heard that it's that's the kind of stuff that I think will be really helpful. I've heard that. I'm anxious to dig in and see what that's all about.
Well, that's pretty good.
Well, Chris, congratulations. Very well-deserved, exciting opportunity, one of the elite coaching jobs in college basketball, and there's no doubt you'll do a terrific job. And some guys will do anything to get away from Dokic and have to deal with him every week.
Yeah, I just thanked him for letting me come to practice.
Yeah, no, we had a great time. We had a good time on those weekly conversations. So I'll enjoy talking to him later today, and it was good being with you guys. Thanks a lot for your words. Appreciate it.
More Courtside in a moment, but first, a reminder that we'd like to hear from you. Whether you're new to the podcast or have been listening for some time, we'd like to know how we're doing. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe so we're easy to find the next time. And if you subscribe in the ESPN app, we can send you an alert whenever we have a new podcast. And you can always tweet us your thoughts at the student section. Appreciate Coach Holtman spending some time with us, giving us a little insight into that transition to Ohio State from Butler. And Butler will move on because we know Barry Collar's done a great job of hiring coaches, and the Butler way lives in his office because he's the architect of the Butler way. But, Dan, last week, a lot of stuff was going on with North Carolina and Cam Johnson. Is he going to get a release? Is he not going to get a release? Can he transfer in the league? He's a graduate. What's your take on the Cam Johnson or transferring in general? Do you have an opinion, D-squared, on transfers and specifically transferring within your league and fifth-year transfers?
Look, the thing I learned from actually coaching, and Seth, you know this, is you never know the real story. You never. And even when you're coaching, you don't know the real story. I had a kid, Ron Lewis, that was going to be the all-time leading scorer in Bowling Green history. All of a sudden, after his sophomore year, he goes to summer school, first session, second session, we pay for it, we give him money to live, blah, 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 move him into an apartment, he goes home to Columbus, Ohio, and guess what? August 9th, Francis. I get a call saying, hey, coach, I'm going to transfer. All right. So what am I supposed to do there? Say, oh, that's great, man, you just, you know, go. No. If I coach today, I would, depending on the situation, block. And all these guys that talk about it or these professors that include it in art, they don't know. And if you haven't coached, you don't know because every single transfer is different for a reason. Like I made Lewis pay back all his summer school money, pay back all the money that we gave him because that money was raised by me to give to players that were playing at Bowling Green, not guys that transfer. Same thing happened with a player that left after I sent him on his summer trip. He transferred from Bowling Green to Northern Iowa, which, ironically enough, all of a sudden his brother went to Northern Iowa too. So there's always crap going on in recruiting. So if Kevin Stallings, who has proven himself, or whatever coach has proven himself, I got no problem with it. And there is nobody, and I do mean this, nobody. I don't care if they're at ESPN. I don't care if they're some professor from Ohio. They don't know anything about the situation. So personally, having been a guy that coached, having been a guy that, if you want to use the proper words, got screwed by kids and got screwed by fellow coaches taking kids, I have no sympathy for anybody in these situations, if you want to know the truth. None, zero. And I have less. I don't even read when I see media guys or guys that haven't been head coaches. I don't read their statements. I don't read their Twitter. I don't pay attention to any of it because if you've never been there, you don't know. And even though you and I were there, Seth, we still don't know what happened. in Cam Johnson's case, what made Pittsburgh. Now, the way the media goes, and again, if I went back to coaching, I wouldn't care about any of this. In fact, when I was the interim head coach in Indiana, I didn't watch anybody. I didn't watch nothing because I didn't care. They didn't know. They had no idea, so why listen to them? I wouldn't pay attention. I would do what I think is right. And if anybody disagrees with that, there's no way I'd be pressured into anything, anytime, anywhere, by anybody on TV, radio, newsprint, nothing. So whatever happened, happened. The kid's going to end up playing. Good for him. Good for Carolina. Bad for Pittsburgh.
You know, the interesting thing is, you know, they're talking about, well, it didn't shock me. The people are talking about in the next year or two, kids are going to be able to transfer after their season and be eligible immediately, which is going to basically create free agency in college basketball. It's going to open up a market. Now, the people on the other side, Dan, are going to say, wait a second. You know, you were at Bowling Green. You were offered the West Virginia job. You were ready to go take another job without maybe you had a little payout, a buyout. Maybe you didn't have a buyout. What would you say to those guys that said, wait a second, you can go and change jobs and improve your station in life, but a player can't go from the MAC to the Big Ten in a better opportunity? Was it the timing, or do you think – tampering right now in college basketball, are people recruiting guys? This is my belief. I think coaches are recruiting players right off someone else's campuses. What do you think?
Oh, God, there's no doubt. You ask any coach, hey, do you have a fifth-year grad transfer list? Of course. And I don't know about you, but I don't like that. Like, I don't mind a kid like the kids at Michigan, Spike Albrick wasn't offered a fifth year, so he went and grad transferred. Great. Bielefeld. You know, we act like these kids are so pristine. Well, and I have two kids in college. You have kids in college. College is different these days. We make it sound like this unbelievable accomplishment to get through 4 years of education. My son laughs. My daughter laughs. She goes, Dad, she goes, I got to believe college was far more difficult when you went through college. These guys, basically, you miss a class. The teacher's afraid to discipline. What? So, you know, this whole, well, they did their work, they transferred. Well, they did their work, and they graduated. Probably, and I know in my case as a player, and I know the guys, 90% of the guys that I played with or I coach, a lot of it was due to the academics that we set up as a school. So, look, if somebody wants to say coaches can't leave, fine, I don't care. If somebody wants to say players are the same as coaches, I would say to you, in what world is the barista the same as the manager of the Starbucks? I mean, in what world is the person out in front the same as the owner? I mean, I don't know what world that is, but if people want to say that, that's fine. Like, I go to a Starbucks on 106th in Michigan because the service there is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, people go to a basketball game because the team's good. So, look, but the barista isn't paid as much as the dude owning the place. The barista isn't being paid as the dude who's got skin in the game. So I don't care either way. But, you know, the answer is always, well, the sky wouldn't fall if we had free agency. I've heard that so many times on Mike and Mike and everything else. Well, the sky wouldn't fall if you had rules either. Sky's staying up there. The moon isn't dropping. So I just, you know, if players want to say, the one thing that I would say, Seth, do you know my son got a $2,700 check for a month at Michigan, first month he was on scholarship? How about that? Like, people say, I can't eat. I go, my son lives downtown Ann Arbor, $1,000 a month apartment, and the dude, when he went on scholarship, had $1,700. He could eat. Everybody's doing okay.
Breakfast is in the locker room, unlimited food, post-game
Seth,
practice meals.
I don't know about you, but I told my son the other day, I said, look around here when he graduated from Michigan. I said, you will never live this well until maybe you're in your 50s. You live in a luxury apartment in a great city, downtown Ann Arbor. You have a workout facility in your complex. You have a state-of-the-art workout facility a mile away at Chrysler Center. You will never live this well. So, look. If players deserve more, if players could transfer, I'm cool with it. That's what people want, fine. But don't tell me they don't get anything. Don't tell me that this isn't a great lifestyle set up for them. Because I've lived it as a player, and I've seen it with my kids. And I got to tell you, my daughter, who is just a student at Indiana, has a hell of a lot less than my son, who's just on the basketball team as a walk-on, and it ain't close.
You know, one thing about transfers, though, Dan, and I agree. To me, there's a major problem in transfers because of the number of tampering. I think tampering is an absolute epidemic, and I think it's something that, look, anywhere you go, guys are always mining to see who's the next player out of that mid-major level. If you think about what's happened at Robert Morris, they've absolutely been gotten cleaned out. You think about what's happened at UNC Asheville. I mean, here you do a good job evaluating players. You develop players. They have good years. Guys are leaving. And it's not just the players. It's the people around the players that are basically brokering these deals. But the one area I have no problem with is fifth-year transfers. And again, those are the same guys that are basically being recruited right off their rosters. But you go to college to earn your degree. And once you earn your degree, all right, if you feel like you need a new environment or want a new opportunity or pursue a higher level, to me, I have no problem because that means you did the right things, that you went to class, you took care of business, you did what you had to do, and you were in a situation where at least it gave you an opportunity of options because you don't have to come back. You can go take a job. You graduated. You can walk away and go get a job because you're a college graduate or continue your playing career. Or, because you're a graduate, it gives you that opportunity. But let me ask you one question. Will guys stop sending guys to summer school? Will they stop pushing guys to take more credits? Will they stop redshirting guys because they don't want to lose that guy in his fifth year? That's the question, and that would not be good.
I'm not redshirting anybody. I know that my two best players, both were player of the year, would have been gone. They would have been scooped up by somebody else. And as I said earlier in the show, you know, we had one kid end up at, you know, Ohio State, got scooped up. One kid ended up in Northern Iowa, started on their Sweet 16 team. So I wouldn't redshirt anybody. Let me ask you this. Let's talk real for a second. And I'm for fifth-year seniors. But we all say the purpose is to go and get a degree. All right, that's fine. That sounds good. But let's be honest. You can have two purposes. You don't have to have one purpose. Like, I graduated every kid that was a senior for me. Okay. I graduate every junior college kid, okay. But the purpose is also to go there and play basketball for the school that you picked to go play basketball at. That's the purpose, too, because when somebody comes on campus, sure, I show them the academics, and I explain how we're doing it academically. But I also show them the basketball and explain what I'm doing for them basketball-wise. So I think there's two purposes. I don't think that, okay, a kid gets a degree, that's the only purpose for him being at Virginia Tech or Bowling Green or Indiana or Long Beach or wherever, Duke. There can be two purposes to these things. And you know, while I don't really have a problem with a fifth-year transfer, I do have a problem in some circumstances of tampering with a fifth-year transfer. Like, I don't understand why we can't do this by a case-by-case basis. Like, you know, Damian Lee leaving, where the hell did he leave? He went to Drexel. Louisville. Yeah, from where?
From Drexel.
He played for Bruiser Flint. Drexel. Yeah, he leaves Drexel and goes to Louisville. It's a heck of a lot different than Max Biafield. Max Biafield wasn't offered a fifth year. Mark Donnell was not offered a fifth year at Michigan. So they, what are they going to do? That's different than being offered a fifth-year scholarship, or a coach has done the right thing by you and redshirted you or got you graduated because of his work raising money. Like, I had four fundraisers to raise money for summer school. The school didn't do anything for me, but I knew it was important. So I don't know why we can't do this on a case-by-case basis as opposed to just saying, hey, you can leave and, you know, basically screw a program because you want to go play somewhere else because you graduated. Well, there's two goals here when you go to college, Seth.
Yeah, there are two goals, but I do think that if you've done the right things, that if that's something that you would like to pursue as a fifth-year guy, and look, you know, again, I feel for the coaches that go through it. You know, again, coaching today, my Long Beach State teams, I redshirted every single player that played for me at Long Beach State except for Lucius Harris. I redshirted Brian Russell, who played in the NBA. I redshirted James Cotton, who played in the NBA. I redshirted Joaquin Hawkins, who played in the NBA. I probably, in the culture of college basketball today, I probably wouldn't have had any of those guys. So maybe if I was living, it would be different.
And that hurts kids.
But as I look at it, Dan, I say the kid does it, what he, the right thing. And you know what? He wants another opportunity, another challenge. Would I want him to be loyal because the relationship that we built up over those 4 years and that he, the appreciation of how hard we've worked together to help him fulfill some of his goals? Sure. But the problem is that that's not that important anymore. It's not important anymore. Right now, someone in that kid's circle of influence, someone in that kid's circle of influence is going to sometime and during the course of that kid's junior year, if he's graduating his junior year because he redshirted a year, he's reaching out to find the next destination. And to me, that situation, the Cameron John, I'm not sure it's worth the fight. Because right now,
probably
you could say, well, you know, I don't care what they're saying, and that's true. But you've also got to recruit the next guy. So, like when that thing happened with Cam Johnson, what was Kevin Stallings thinking? He wasn't winning that. And he's trying to rebuild the program in his image, not Jamie Dixon's image. He's got enough obstacles. That one more thing, is that one more thing going to stop him from being able to rebuild a program? Because the perception is going to be, all right, that here's a guy that maybe didn't connect with people. Because it happened before when he was at with Vanderbilt with Sheldon Jeter, who transferred to Pitt, and he tried to block it, and eventually he gave in, and the kid went to Pitt. Now it's happening again at Pitt. So sometimes you got to say, wait a second. If it's happening over and over again, how's it going to impact? He was in a no-win situation.
To who?
Don't you agree? For his career.
No. Look, to me, again, this is why I'm not in coaching, but I could care less. I mean, to me, if I know I'm doing the right thing, I don't give a damn what my career is. I don't give a damn what – and again, this is why I'm not in coaching. This is why I left West Virginia, went back to Bowling Green. I don't care. I don't care who gets on their high horse. If I know I'm doing the right thing – like, I don't think loyalty exists in college basketball. I mean, if we really want to talk real, you know, Spike Albrecht wasn't offered a fifth year. I have no problem with players not being loyal to institutions. I have no problem with that. Zero. Because I know institutions aren't loyal to players. I know that. Spike Albrecht wasn't offered a fifth year. All right. So there was no loyalty from Michigan for Spike Albrecht. There was, hey, look, we don't know if you can play. We're going to get another guy. You're out. I have no problem. My only thing is when you do absolutely right, and this is what drives me nuts about our media, they paint coaches as these devious, money-grabbing, blah, blah, blah. And I sit there and go, yeah, media guy, you ever had a player stay at your house for 2 weeks because he got a Charlie horse that became, I forget the name of it, and he couldn't walk, so my wife took him. You know, so I think case-by-case basis is something. Like, we all say a kid did the right thing because he graduated. Let me ask you a question. Did he? Or was there a GA from the coach that made him go to class every day? Was there a professor that helped him out because he was on the basketball team? Wasn't the kid doing the right thing? Then, what did the kid do off the court? What was he involved in? I don't know. But so I would go, hey, look, it's a great rule if done right, but to blanketly say every kid's done the right thing, you know, I disagree with that based on my, you know, you can only do things based on your experiences. And the loyalty thing, I don't care about either way, because there is no loyalty from schools to players, and there's no loyalty from players to school. That is the way it is, Seth. And you know that better.
And there's
than
no loyalties from administrations to coaches. Let's
none.
I mean that's just
none.
I mean, that's the way it is. And I just think that in the end, if you have a kid that's miserable on your roster, it's going to kill.
Again, case by case, go. Yeah. Yeah.
See, well, I do think the whole appeal thing, and you know, we see it all the time. Like, you know, there are rules. There has to be some rules. And the NCAA has rules. They also have exceptions to the rules. And, like, so something comes up, and originally the NCAA says, no, that's against our rules. You can't do it. And that's great. And then all of a sudden, someone appeals it. And they look at it by case by case. And eventually, most of the times, the decision is made, and it's probably the decision that's in the best interest of all parties, or at least a party. But we lose our minds instead of letting that appeal process take place. You know, everyone tries to get on their soapbox, scream, yell, rant, and rave to think, well, we're pressuring the NCAA. No, you're not pressuring the NCAA. What we're doing is that's the process. That's the rule, but there are exceptions to the rule. So you know what? You get the ruling, you appeal the rule, all right, it goes to another committee, and then eventually a decision usually is made that makes pretty good common sense, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. And you know, I don't disagree with what you're saying. Let me go back to a process. I don't disagree with what you're saying about Kevin Stallings. Like, I don't disagree that this is a battle that he's not going to win. I don't, you know, in the court of public opinion, you know, let's face it. I mean, the court of a public opinion, the coach is the big bad wolf, and the player is this poor, you know,
exploited.
Oh, God, I can't eat. I told my son, man, you're going to eat better than you've ever eaten in your life because you ain't eating. Ramen noodles are 1 year away, baby. Can you imagine, Seth, that when you were in college as a student athlete, think about this. You're in college, I'm in college as a student athlete, and I walked around with a sign that said, broke college student, whatever the sign Nigel Hayes said. Could you imagine? I'd have gotten beat up. And, like, seriously, I would have gotten, like, you telling me you're broke and you're on scholarship? Other students would have beat me to a pulp saying, hey, how about you're a student athlete whining in front of us? What? I guarantee, my friends even told me that. They sent me a picture, two buddies of mine said, had you done that, we'd have beat the hell out of you. Because you're on scholarship and you're whining in front of other students that you're broke, guys that have student loans in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. World's an amazing place today, and I'm just glad I'm old.
There you have it. But I'll tell you one thing, you know what's not old? Josh, you know what's not old, Josh? The student section is not old.
Here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
Yeah, you're right, Seth. And this is Dan's first time with the
first time
the
in the student section.
This
is not
experience.
Easy.
Yeah.
Not easy. D squared, but D squared lives in the student
That's
section.
That's true.
For
you know
three
who else,
hours.
You know who else lives
day.
In the student section?
ID Kelly won.
ID Kelly won, baby. And ID Kelly wants to know, with the number of mid-major coaches who turned down Ohio State before Holtman accepted the job, is the Big Ten not as big of a draw as everyone thinks?
Well, wait a second.
You can't have
who
me
turned,
in
who
the
turned
students.
It down,
Nobody
ID
turned
Ken.
The job down. Why
I mean,
do
first
people
of all,
listen
is a
to
Big
the media?
East school, is the Big East school, if Greg McDermott turned it down, is the Big East school a mid-major?
He turned nothing down.
ID Kelly won. Very disappointed. He's the best. By the way, D squared, ID Kelly won.
He's not the best. As a person
he's
first
a very loyal student sectioner.
Well, you can be loyal and dumb.
Now here we go. We're insulting our guy, ID Kelly won. I guess if
he's going
to take
be,
a little while for Dockett to warm up to you.
If he's going to be involved in the new regime here, he needs to bring it.
I mean, you got to understand. I think we might warm you up. Have you call in to Dan's show once every
Please.
Other week, kind of warm him up so it can be warm and cuddly by the time and the next time we do our show. But I agree with you, Dan. We don't know who turned this job down, but if those two coaches were the two people that were involved, Butler and Creighton are far from mid-major programs, and Ohio State is an elite, top 15 type job. They've got to continue to work on their facilities. It's not where the program was.
Hey,
but in that conference, that job is as good as it gets.
A very naked Bob Knight got out of the shower. We were after practice.
It's another visual I'm really not excited about right now.
I know. Stupefyingly naked Bob Knight got out of the shower and walks into the locker room where I'm just sitting on a couch watching film and says to me as he's toweling off, including a fine chamois on the undercarriage, he tells me, hey, Dockage, you know the best three jobs in the Big Ten are? I said, no, Knight. What are the best three jobs in the Big Ten? He says, Illinois, Ohio State, and Michigan. I said, really? Why? And as he's toweling off, bent over, he says, players, how stupid are you? Players, there's so many more players in those three states than there are at Indiana. And he turns and he walks back into the shower. So I've always had that in my mind, not the image of a naked Bob Knight with a fine chamois working, but what he said about players. And as I moved to Ohio and coached in the state for 10 years, man, there's players. Damn, there's players. There's players everywhere. Great players. And tough players. And here's the other thing, Seth. Great high school coaches and really good dudes coaching AAU. It's not the crazy handout guys coaching AAU in that state. It's a great state. It's a great job. Good for our friend Chris Holtman.
I just real quick, I agree with, because if to me the whole key to building a program is having players in your state and your geographic footprint. If you have players in your state and your geographic footprint where kids can get to your campus, that's a good job.
My question is, how can you be very naked? It's kind of like being pregnant. You either are or you're not. You know.
All right, let me ask you a question. If you're just wearing a towel, are you naked?
No.
All right. Well, I consider that naked, but with a towel. So this was, you know, sans towel.
That's what we in the business refer to as buck naked.
Oh, yeah, I've been talking buck naked.
Is there a business like that? Yeah. I didn't know there was a business. So now we're in a business of towels, butt naked, and chamois.
That's true.
As we go through this podcast, there will be many Bob Knight naked stories, by the way. I have a bunch.
We have one more student section question, guys, before we get out of here. This one from Drew Allen, the other loyal member of the student section. He's at the Drew Abides. And Drew wants to know which program is poised for the most success after their Hall of Fame coach leaves. Duke, Carolina, or Cuse?
That's an interesting
one. You're going to give me Duke. Excuse me. You're going to give me Carolina. Because the state is North Carolina. North Carolina.
I would say, even though here's the problem with Carolina. There's no next coach in waiting at Carolina. So does Sean Miller take that job? I think they're going to end up having to go outside the family at North Carolina. Which, even though North Carolina is one of the top three jobs in all of college basketball, you're going to have to go outside. Where Duke, I think, you know, whether it's Amaker, whether it's Collins, whether it's Wojo, whether it's Capel, they have an easier transition, and I think it'll probably end up being Capel in terms of having someone that can transition right into the position. So I would say Carolina, but because Duke is set up with former players that understand the program, understand the culture, I would say Duke right now today, because there are a number of potential coaches waiting.
Well, I would.
And you would say
Sean
Dan Dockers.
I would take Sean Miller as the coach of North Carolina.
Would he take
any
it?
Of those guys coaching?
Would he take
I don't
it?
Know. Well, I'm just saying. I mean, the pipeline, as you know, I don't know. The program that I'd be leery a little bit about is Syracuse, man. I married a Syracuse girl, and I didn't realize that the weather is, you know, no good, although my wife thinks it's pristine, and I think she needs mental help. You go in this place, there's 23, 24, 25,000. The parking is no good, but somehow, because of Boeheim, they've managed to have this thing. Now, picture a half-filled dome on a nightly basis. Picture a three-quarters filled dome on a nightly basis. I'm telling you, that's the one where I don't blame Mike Hopkins at all for saying, you know what, it's time for me to be a head coach number two, and maybe this isn't the greatest situation moving forward. And I would say, in my order, it would be North Carolina, Duke, and then a distant third would be Syracuse.
I agree.
Keep those questions coming. Yeah. Use the hashtags.
Even
I'd be better IR Harris or whatever that guy is. He's got to be better.
You better learn the name, Dan. You better learn about ID Kelly if you're going to be a part of this podcast.
Is that any relation to R. Kelly?
ID Kelly's the man.
Yeah.
I am hip.
I think Dan might be bringing a new breed of student section. I mean, we're going to bring a new breed to the student section. There's no doubt about it.
I get that sense as well.
Before we go, I want to remind you to subscribe to our show in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you prefer to access podcasts. Many thanks again to the new Ohio State head men's basketball coach, Chris Holtman. For Dan Dockich, I'm Seth Greenberg. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Coach G. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including Daily NBA Conversation and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the NBA category in the ESPN app. Courtside with Coach G.